From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen our broadcast and online streaming voanews.id.
Hello listeners, welcome back to me Ahmad Faisal in English program. Hopefully you are so fine and still have spirit to listen our program today. And for these 60 minutes ahead, we would like to accompany you with various segments that can not only entertain you, but also educate as well as inform you our several beneficial information and entertainment such as news, commentary, and also other self-information as well as Indonesian pop songs. Well, listeners, we begin our program with news. So stay tuned with us on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world, at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id.
Here is the news, first the headlines. Indonesia-Serbia strengthened ties to fight transnational crime. Symptomatic cases of COVID-19 in the community is a greater concern, although the number of daily cases has dropped in Singapore. Now the news in details. The Indonesian government is seeking Serbia's cooperation to strengthen efforts to fight transnational crimes, Minister of Law and Human Rights Yasona Lawli said in a statement received in Jakarta on Tuesday. The minister said during a meeting with Serbian Deputy Minister of Justice Radomir Ilic in Belgrade on Monday that Indonesia and Serbia share similar geographical position, in which they are strategic as the hubs to off trade paths. On the other hand, this geographical position also means there is a potential for unwanted impacts, including vulnerability for transnational organized crimes. Minister Yasona Lawli was referring to the transnational organized crimes such as smuggling of drugs, firearms, and other contraband items. The minister also said he believed that strengthening cooperation and collaboration between countries is vital for fighting transnational organized crime. The Indonesian embassy in Muscat repatriated 180 Indonesians from Oman with a special flight of Garuda Indonesia. According to a press release received in Jakarta on Tuesday, with the assistance of the Indonesian embassy in Muscat, the 180 Indonesian citizen and one foreign citizen holding a kitas in Oman participated in an independent repatriation to Indonesia on Monday. Indonesian Ambassador to Oman Mustafa Taufik Abdul Latif directly released the departure of 180 Indonesian in Oman at the Muscat International Airport. The repatriated Indonesian citizens consisted of former migrant workers who experienced termination of employment contracts, crew members, migrant workers of domestic sector who have completed the contracts, and displaced Indonesian citizens, including 12 public worshippers who were in Oman since March 2020. The Indonesian government is speeding up efforts to issue a regulation on carbon trading as part of Indonesia's commitment to reducing global greenhouse gas emission. Environment and Forestry Minister Siti Nurbaya Bakar said that the government has spent the last year preparing the emission trading system for the future domestic carbon market. Minister Siti Nurbaya mentioned that the set of regulation would stipulate at least three main issues, including guidelines and plans on carbon trading, carbon offset, and the commodity market, which will be based in Jakarta. Ever since 2018, Indonesia has been actively introducing green sukuk to the worldwide market as an instrument to collect $1.25 billion in funds to finance environmentally friendly projects. Minister Siti Nurbaya also revealed that movement on the regulation was made after the government confirmed receipt of $56 million grant from Norway as the first payment for Indonesia's success in reducing carbon emission under the Reducing Emission from Deforestation and Forest Degradation, REDD+, cooperation scheme. The agency will support climate change mitigation and adaptation efforts, which include carbon trading. This news comes to you from Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Let's move on to the international news. While the number of daily COVID-19 cases in Singapore has declined, the number of symptomatic unlike cases in the community is a greater concern, as a significant increase could signal underlying community transmission. Nuku Kusumawati has the details.
Since the start of Phase 1, the daily number of new cases has stabilized and declined somewhat, from over 500 new cases a day in early June to 200 cases in the past week. Some days may be higher, some days lower.
The Singapore Minister of Health, Gan Kim Yong, on Tuesday reported 157 new COVID-19 infections, including 20 cases in the community. This brings the total number of cases in Singapore to 45,140. A deeper investigation found that more than half of the community cases since the start of Phase 1 are linked, with the majority detected through contact tracing. Most had already been in quarantine. Of the unlinked cases, the majority were asymptomatic and detected via proactive screening of workers or regular testing of workers as part of Ministers of Health surveillance.
What is of greater concern to us are the number of symptomatic unlinked cases that are detected in the community through routine screening for acute respiratory infection, or what we call ARIs. These are cases that emerge in the community with no clear connection to any existing cluster, dormitories, or construction sector. They reflect cases with unknown sources of infection. And if this number goes up significantly, we should be very careful, as they may signal an increase in the underlying community transmission.
Minister Gan Kim Yong added that in order to detect such cases, community testing was expanded to all individuals of age 13 and above who are diagnosed with acute respiratory infection at first presentation to doctor. On similar events, Singapore Minister for National Development Lawrence Wong stressed that the vast majority of linked cases originated from household transmission and some infection taking place in workplaces.
That's one area where all of us can do our part to reduce the risk of transmission further. Businesses, companies, employers all have to step up their safe management practices at work in order to further reduce the risk of transmission at workplaces. Making sure that the majority of their employees continue to work from home is one precaution that every employer should continue to take.
Minister Lawrence Wong emphasized that for those who are required to be in the office, measures such as split teams, making sure they do not gather for social activities, are important precautions that every employer should continue to uphold. Unlike pre-circuit breakers, very few cases are related in the community caused by social interaction. This is because of strict restriction on social activities. However, this regulation cannot always be enforced. German Ambassador to the United Nations Christoph Hoskin said on Tuesday that he is hopeful the UN Security Council will be able to reach a consensus and adopt a resolution reauthorizing the cross-border aid delivery mechanism in Syria. The 15-member UN Security Council is set to vote later on Tuesday on a draft resolution that would extend the cross-border authorization to bring humanitarian assistance from Turkey for an additional year until the existing authorizations expire on July 10. The mechanism for cross-border aid delivery in the northwest of Syria was first adopted in 2014. Since the initial number of 4 checkpoints was reduced to 2, the checkpoints at Bab al-Hawa and Bab al-Salam. Beijing on Tuesday reported 0 new coronavirus cases for the first time since the emergence of a cluster in the Chinese capital in June that prompted fears of domestic second wave. Localized lockdowns across the city have been eased in recent days, with people living in areas of the city considered low risk now allowed to travel freely again. The government has since also imposed a strict lockdown on nearly 500,000 people in neighboring Hebei province to contain a fresh cluster there, adopting the same strict measures imposed at the height of the pandemic in the epicenter of Wuhan City earlier this year. The show will go on for the Venice Film Festival in September, but with a few modifications due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Organizers said that they are pushing forward with plans for its 77th installment, which will include a slightly reduced number of films in the main competition, as well as some outdoors and virtual screenings. If the schedule stays intact, it will be the first major film festival since COVID-19 essentially shut down the industry in mid-March. Festival director Alberto Barbera said in a statement that he is extremely pleased that the biennial cinema can be held with a minimum reduction of films and section, and that a significant numbers of directors and actors will accompany films to the Lido. There are 50 to 55 films in the official selection, which will be announced on July 28, and screenings will take place in the traditional venues as well as two outdoors arenas at the Giardini della Biennale and skating rink on the Lido. With adopted safety measures established by authorities, the Venice Film Festival runs from September 2nd to 12th. Listener, that was the news. I'm Nuka Kusumawati. Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with commentary for today entitling India-China Borders Dispute. Good news comes from the borders of India and China, when the world is still struggling to overcome the COVID-19 pandemic. India, which is working hard to overcome the coronavirus in the country, is getting a breath of fresh air in its recently strained relation with China. After a bloody conflict which did not involve any exchange of gunfire between two sides last June, a peace agreement was finally reached. The Chinese began to withdraw their troops from the border with India. This was marked by the dismantling of military camps and several facilities in the Galwan Valley. The place is often the location of military clashes between the two countries, as happened on June 15. The Chinese-Indian feud began 50 years ago due to border dispute in the Himalayan highlands. Peace measures took place in a meeting between Indian security advisor Ajit Gopal and Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi. The talks, which took place on Sunday, July 5th, resulted in an agreement regarding the withdrawal of military forces from the disputed border zone. From the Chinese side, information was obtained that effective steps would be taken to ease tensions at the border. The two sides also agreed to continue the dialogue to follow up on the peace talks. Both China and India said they agreed to withdraw the troops significantly. Trying to find a solution through negotiation to reach an agreement is a very good way. There is no solution that can be achieved when differences of opinion and principles are pursued through violence or war. For India and China, the resolution of border dispute, which has lasted half a century, through negotiation, is the best way. Moreover, without having to include foreign parties to interfere. Of course, further steps are still needed to achieve a permanent settlement of the conflict between the two neighbors, India and China. That was commentary. I'm Nuka Kusumawati. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to our regular segment of Today in History. Firstly, I'll begin with a history on July 8, 1940, Kemayoran Airport was officially opened. Kemayoran Airport was the first airport in Indonesia served for international flights. This airport runway was built in 1934 and was officially opened on July 8, 1940. The airport, formerly known as Kemayoran, slowly stopped operating on January 1, 1983 and officially ceased operations on March 31, 1985 with the commencement of the transfer of flight activities to the Soekarno-Hatta International Airport that has just been inaugurated. Next turn to a history on July 8, 1976, Palapa A1 satellite was launched. The Palapa A1 satellite is the first satellite owned by Indonesia and operated by Perusahaan Umum Telekomunikasi Perumtel or Telecommunication Company of Indonesia. Palapa A1 was launched on July 8, 1976 with a Delta 2914 rocket and has been operating since July 9, 1976. This satellite was the beginning of the Palapa satellite program, which began in February 1975. Construction of the 10 stations was completed in 17 months, one of the fastest constructions of four Boeing. The Generation A Palapa satellite was specially designed and built so that it could concentrate its signal strength in the entire Indonesian archipelago, especially its main islands plus neighboring countries such as Malaysia, the Philippines, Singapore, and Thailand. We end this segment of Today in History with a history of presidential elections on July 8, 2009. The 2009 presidential general election was held to elect president and vice president of Indonesia for the 2009-2014 period. The vote was held on July 8, 2009. The pair of Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono Budiono won the first round by winning 60.80% votes, defeating Megawati Sukarnoputri, Prabowo Subianto, and Muhammad Yusuf Kala Wiranto. Listener, that was Today in History.
Lalu kau
listener, you are still with us on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. For this segment, we would like to give you information about My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, today's My Indonesia is titled Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index Increases, Government Says the Policy is Right. London-based global information provider IHS Market recently released a report that stated Indonesian Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, of June 2020 was 39.1. It was 28.6 in the previous months. PMI uses 50 as the threshold. Indonesian Industry Ministry Agus Gumiwang Kartasasmita has reported on Industry Ministry's official website on Saturday, the 4th of July, stated Indonesian manufacturing PMI increased into 39.1 in June 2020, indicating that the national manufacturing industry is starting to recover. He said the index increase also encourages trust in the manufacturing industry sector towards various strategic measures done by the government in boosting the economy. This showed that the government's policy in the new normal has been right. Based on data released by IHS Market, the Future Output Index, benchmark and business sentiments have spiked into 73% in June. According to Agus Gumiwang, this was the highest in the last 5 months, and this achievement became Indonesian government's capital to keep issuing policies that can keep encouraging activities of manufacturing in the new normal. Nevertheless, the industry minister affirmed the national economic growth anticipation of the third and fourth quarter of 2020 because that period decides national economic performance in 2021. To maintain manufacturing performance, the industry ministry supported the industry to keep operating by issuing industrial operational and mobility permit, abbreviated as IOMGI, that still follows the health protocol. Until now, Industry Ministry had issued more than 17,000 IOMKIs. With industry operational, around 5 million workers can stay in their job. Besides focusing on industry sector recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic through various stimulus, the government had also prepared various incentives for investors who will invest in Indonesia, including the super deductible tax around 300% for industry that develops research and development facility in Indonesia, and 200% for industry that develops vocational education in the country. Also, until 2024, the government will build 27 new industrial areas across Indonesia. And listener, that was My Indonesia.
From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program.
Stop bicara cinta jika hanya garitkan luka. Stop bicara rindu jika hadirmu tak terasa. Perlukah ku menjauh, biarkan kau sendiri sampai kau cari aku. Aku baiknya semua kembali kita pikirkan. Lanjutkah, hentikah kita? Ku
karena ku ingin bertahan ada cinta masih tersisa untukmu, tapi tolonglah beri aku alasan yang tepat untuk tak meninggalkanmu. Aku letih berjuang sendiri. Stop. Janji aku bukan prioritasmu. Stop bicara tentang masa depan kita tak jelas. Perlukah ku menjauh? Biarkan kau sendiri sampai kau cari aku. Aku baiknya semua kembali kita pikirkan. Lanjutkah, hentikah kita? Aku bertahan karena ku ingin bertahan. Ada cinta masih tersisa untukmu, tapi tolonglah beri aku alasan yang tepat untuk tak meninggalkanmu. Aku letih berjuang sendiri. Stop, 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 stop. Stop, 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 stop. Jika hanya garitkan luka.
Listener, you are still with us on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. Listener, after listening Indonesian song, it is the right time for us to present next segment that talk about tourism and local wisdom of Indonesian people. And here is Indonesian Wonder.
Listener, welcome back to Indonesian Wonder. Today I'm going to let you know about Kiluan Bay. Kiluan Bay is a tourism object located in Bumi Sarinatar, Tanggamus Regency, Lampung Province, with marine tourism potentials and well known with many dolphins and whales around the bay. Kiluan Bay is also well known with its natural beauty and haven for fishers. Annually at the bay, fishing competition is held and participated in by the fishers throughout Indonesia. The bay has a distance around 73 kilometers from Bandar Lampung and takes around 3 hours by motor vehicles. One of the bay's peculiarities is dolphins' attraction at the sea. At the Kiluan Bay, you can watch dolphins groups whose number is in hundreds. Kiluan Bay is a migration line of two kinds of dolphins, namely bottlenose dolphins with a bigger body and half gray color, and smaller long beak dolphins. The two kinds of the dolphins are a lot, and hundreds or even thousands of dolphins pass the bay. Those dolphins are quite familiar with human beings. They like to approach the boats or ships which pass at the sea. If you want to see those dolphins, it is better at 6 a.m. of local time. At Kiluan Bay, there is also Gayau Lagoon, which is located behind the hills of the bay. To go to the lagoon, it takes around 30 minutes. There is also a tour guide for tourists who visit the bay for the first time with an entrance fee 50,000 rupiahs per trip. To enter the lagoon complex, you must buy a ticket worth 5,000 rupiahs per person. Going to the lagoon, tourists will pass a beautiful beach with many large rocks scattered, but you have to be careful with its wave, which is quite big. After passing the beach, you can watch the lagoon's beauty, which is shaped like a basin at the beach and bounded by coral walls. The water in the lagoon is very clear and transparent with a greenish-blue color. The depth of the lagoon is around 1 until 3 meters, so that it is safe for swimming or soaking. At Kiluan Bay, tourists can also do snorkeling. The edge of the beach varies, ranging from white sandy beaches with sloping coastal contours to rocky cliffs. Well, listener, that was our segment of Indonesian Wonder featuring Kiluan Bay in Lampung. Tomorrow we'll meet again with another interesting topic. Bye-bye.
Listener, for the next segment, we will present you Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia. In our program, Let's Speak Indonesian Language, we will introduce you to some Indonesian vocabularies and expressions, and we invite you to speak in Indonesian language. And this program is a cooperation program between the Voice of Indonesia and the Department of Language Development and Language Education of the Indonesian Ministry of Education and Culture. And here is Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
This is Voice of Indonesia with Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, a lesson in the Indonesian language on the radio. We introduce some Indonesian vocabulary and tips on how to use it in a conversation. This segment is a joint initiative of Voice of Indonesia and the Language and Book Development Agency of the Indonesian Ministry of Education and Culture. Today's topic is Mulai Jam Berapa? In English, what time does it start? Listen to this conversation about Mulai Jam Berapa, which means, what time does it start? Kevin asks Siti, when does Bahasa Indonesia class start?
Pukul berapa kelas Bahasa Indonesia dimulai?
Pukul 2 siang.
Now I'm going to introduce the vocabularies and expressions related to the topic today. I will say each word slowly and twice. You can follow after me. Pukul berapa dimulai? Pukul berapa dimulai? Which means, what time does it start? Kelas. Kelas, which means class. Pukul 2. Pukul 2, which means 2 o'clock. Siang. Siang, which means afternoon. To ask about time, you can use some expressions among others. Pukul berapa kelas dimulai? Or pada pukul berapa kelas dimulai? Which means, what time does the class begin? To respond someone who asks about time, you can answer with adverb of time. For examples, Siti, pukul berapa kelas bahasa Indonesia dimulai? Pukul berapa kelas Bahasa Indonesia dimulai? Which means, what time does Bahasa Indonesia class begin? Kevin, pukul 2 siang. Pukul 2 siang. Which means, at 2 o'clock. When asking about time, you can use two contexts of conversation, formal and informal contexts. The formal one is used for all the people, new people, and respected people. In the former conversation, you can use an expression pada pukul berapa dimulai. Pada pukul berapa dimulai. While the informal context is used for people who are already familiar, friends, or younger people. In your informal conversation, you just say pukul berapa mulainya. Pukul berapa mulainya, which means, at what time does it begin or start? Well, listener, before we end today's Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, let's listen to the conversation once more.
Pukul berapa kelas Bahasa Indonesia dimulai?
Pukul 2 siang.
That was Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, a lesson in Bahasa Indonesia or the Indonesian language on the radio. Hopefully, this edition will be useful for those who want to know more about Bahasa Indonesia. See you next week with other interesting topics. Sampai jumpa.
Engkau datang menyapa tertawa. Cinta ini melanda, begitu nyata, begitu tanda.
Listener, you are still with us on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. And listeners, next segment we would like to give you information about Indonesian music. Hopefully, it can also entertain you. Here is Music Corner.
Voice of Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world. Listener, welcome back to Music Corner. Now we present a song from South Sumatra entitled Pempek Lenjer. The song Pempek Lenjer tells about one variety of typical food of Palembang, South Sumatra, namely Pempek Lenjer. The lyrics describe about pempek with big round and long texture with arm size. It is a little bit hard texture but keeps delicable to eat. The lyrics also mention those who eat pempek lenjer will certainly like it. If you have not had an opportunity to taste pempek lenjer, the typical food from Palembang, South Sumatra, just let's listen the song sung by Vienna Fridiana. Enjoy the song.
Kecil-kecil rasanya merem, masuk ke mulut, matanya mejam, mertua lewat masih ditelan. Kecil keras sudah biasa, asap baik iwaknya terasa. Digoreng pakai minyak kelapa, jadi nambah lemak rasanya. Sama-sama.
Voice of Indonesia. Voice of Indonesia.
Mulai kulalui
Listener, we end our togetherness in English language program broadcasting. Thank you for your kind attention, for listening our English program. And don't go anywhere and keep listening for our another program. So stay with us on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. Listener, don't forget to like and comment at Facebook The Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world, Instagram voice.of.indonesia, Twitter at voindonesia, and our email address voi@voinews.id.